Hello and welcome to Press TV's News Analysis. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, more than a decade in Afghanistan, U.S.-led forces are now not only facing the wrath of the Taliban, but now the wrath from Afghans that they once considered allies. Well, the so-called green-on-blue assaults, which means friendly Afghan security forces killing American-led troops, have been on the rise. Have foreign forces lost the battle for the hearts and minds of Afghans? We will be looking at this and why these type of assaults are on the rise and what it means for occupying forces in Afghanistan.
The aftermath of a bomb attack against U.S. forces in Afghanistan. Such attacks are often claimed by Taliban militants. But the U.S.-led troops are now under attack from a more familiar source, their local colleagues, the Afghan army and police. The so-called green-on-blue attacks have killed several foreign soldiers, mostly Americans, over the past few days.
I cannot give you the specific details for this investigation since it's still ongoing. What I can tell you, however, is that when we look into the other incidents, we take them very seriously. They are very tragic, but they do not reflect the overall situation here in Afghanistan.
More than 30 U.S.-led soldiers have been killed so far this year in attacks by Afghan forces. Most of those killed are American. Opinion polls show most Afghans see foreign forces as occupiers, and the distrust of them is rampant among both Afghan civilians and military personnel. The Afghan anger further increased after videos emerged of the copies of the Holy Quran having been burned by American forces. The deadly U.S.-led attacks on Afghan civilians have also played a major role in creating more and more hatred toward the U.S.-led foreign forces.
All our problems are caused by foreigners. It is thanks to foreign intervention that Afghanistan has been at war for the past 30 years. I'm happy they are finally leaving us alone.
Many Western observers now admit that the U.S. and its allies have lost the battle for hearts and minds in Afghanistan, where public surveys show that more and more Afghans hold foreign troops responsible for the deaths and destruction in their country.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program from Chicago, Afghan author and expert, Dr. Mohammed Dawood Miraki, and from Kabul political analyst, Mr. Mohammed Azizi. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start off in Chicago with Dr. Miraki. Why do you think that we're seeing an increase in these types of assaults? And thanks so much for being with us.
Good to be with you. Thank you very much. Well, there are several reasons. Of course, some of those reasons your reporter have pointed out to. One of the problem is this: after the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan, they created an artificial economy. An artificial economy had no opportunity for anyone else, but this armed forces or the army and the police served as a medium of economic rejuvenation for the population, and a lot of people enlisted simply to survive. Furthermore, upon continuation of this process, Afghan officers, even high-ranking officers, have been treated with a great deal of contempt by low-ranking American officers or low-ranking NATO officers. In fact, have firsthand observations on several occasions that Afghan colonels have been treated like dirt, if you will, by a captain, by an American captain.
Well, let me just jump in here, Dr. Miraki. Dr. Miraki, are you saying that the American soldiers on purpose treated the Afghan soldiers like this, who they were supposed to be working with on an equal basis? Explain exactly what you mean.
Let me give you a simple example. Just 2 months ago, an American colonel went to a provincial governor. and cursed him and treated him and to a level that somebody would not even treat an animal, and threatened him even with sexual assault. An American colonel threatened an Afghan governor. This is a first-hand data that I have. Only to tell him that you have to do exactly what we tell you. If you don't do this, we will do this to you, this to you. Your telephones are from us. Your salary is from us. This building that you're living as is from us. So you are our slave. This is the kind of behavior, and as well as on the battlefield. Battlefield, they make a slight mistake. They be treated like dirt. They're looked at with great deal of contempt and okay. disrespected. And when high-ranking officers are treated in such manner, the low-ranking soldier, they say, what is this nonsense? Yeah, we get salary for this, but, you know, we are not here to compromise our dignity.
Okay.
They had no other choice. They came here because this was the economic opportunity for them, not because they believe in this charade, this occupation. And furthermore, when they had the continuation of civilian casualties and the massacres that they have committed, that further molded the opinion of Afghan soldiers. After all, they are Afghans.
All right. Well, let me turn to, sorry to interrupt you, but let me get everybody involved in this discussion. Let me turn to Afghanistan and get our guest, Mr. Mohammed Azizi in Kabul, political analyst, in on this discussion. So after almost 11 years of, and which will be this October, of U.S.-led forces being in Afghanistan, what has really then been accomplished? If we're seeing an increase on this type of what would have been called at one point in time probably friendly fire, so what has been accomplished in more than a decade of occupying Afghanistan?
See, there are a couple of things. Number one, that with all respect that I have for Dr. Mirakay, I do not agree with him that the Afghan military forces are not treated at equal level by their American fellows. We all know that the military service is a disciplined service. We cannot really tolerate the mistakes that happens. Now, coming towards the achievement of the last 10 years, let me be very open that Afghanistan has achieved enormously in the last 10 years with all the mistakes that has been done by the international community, with all the problems that we have faced. We have got a constitution in this country, we have got elected parliament, we have got an elected president, and we have got different institutions which are getting strengthened. However, it does not mean that we do not have problems. Mm-hmm. We do have problems. As Dr. Mirakay mentioned, that there are a good number of people who are joining the Afghan armed forces is because they are jobless. They don't have any other jobs, so they go and they work for the Afghan forces. Now, likewise, the Taliban have changed their tactics over the last 10 years. They have been defeated badly in this country by the Afghan forces as well as by the international forces. There is no doubt about it. So now they are hiring within the ranks of the Afghan police, Afghan army, and secret or intelligence services people. So they cooperate with the Taliban, and the Taliban are misusing this opportunity. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the institution which is built in order to protect the lives of the Afghan people and to serve them and to make their lives easier and to provide them comfort, we can see that from time to time these incidents do happen. Now,
okay.
What are the root causes of all these happenings that are coming towards the life loss of our international partners, in particular the Americans? It is very important that proper investigations should take place instead of just ignoring them. Because
all right. Okay. Let me turn back to Chicago and get Dr. Miraki's response to that. Dr. Miraki, our guest, Mr. Azizi, in Afghanistan, is saying that it is not true what you said, that actually the Afghan military forces are treated with respect by the U.S. forces.
And I wish that were true, but it isn't. Of course, I have people in various battalions that I know in eastern Afghanistan, southern Afghanistan, as well as northern Afghanistan that have given me ample data. One. Secondly, true There have been development, there have been changes. Of course, $500 billion, if we had spent $500 billion in Afghanistan the way they should have been spent, Afghanistan would have turned into a Switzerland. But the $500 billion, when we equate it to what has been achieved, hardly anything has been achieved. Okay. People have to understand the very fundamental factor. That the very fundamental factor is that Afghanistan was invaded and is occupied. No, you can give it all the rosy pictures in the world. It doesn't change any that reality at all. Secondly, a lot of Afghans, either from hypocrisy or from ignorance, they say, "Oh, this was not an invasion, but United Nations okayed it." I challenge anybody in the world that could marshal their evidence. Three resolutions after September 12, none of them allowed invasion of Afghanistan. Third factor, the constitution was written in the State Department, brought in an artificial way to be debated in Afghanistan and imposed on us. Think about it. No constitution on the planet has an economic system stipulated. In this constitution, it says Afghanistan will have an open market system. Think about it. Economic is a science. It is not dictated. It is implemented based on the historical and evolutionary development of a society.
Okay. Well, let me turn to London. Let me get my other guests in on this discussion, Dr. Miraki. I will come back to you. Let me turn to London and welcome Mr. Jim Brenn from the Stop the War Coalition. Well, what about that, Mr. Brenn? We have back and forth and differences of opinion on this situation. Do you think that there has been a lot accomplished by U.S.-led forces in Afghanistan? Has the occupying force actually made life better for the average Afghani?
Well, I would just refer people to the World Health Organization report of March this year on child malnutrition in Afghanistan, which I think put Afghanistan at the highest rate of child malnutrition in the world. And I think that's a very telling statistic. I don't think you can get a more basic statistic about a society than the health, or even not so much the health, but simply the feeding of its infants. Afghanistan has one of the most extraordinary economies in the world. It's almost entirely composed of foreign military spending, or very largely composed of foreign military spending, and secondarily of foreign donated money. It has really no independent economy. Every statistic, for example, the dependency on drugs exports increased 133% in 2011 compared to 2010. This is not an independent country. This is not a country on the road of independence. This is an extremely foreign-dependent country, and a country more than that dependent on foreign military.
Well, Jim Brenn, staying with you now, Dr. Azizi just made a point, and he said that even the Constitution, the Afghan Constitution, was drawn up in Washington at the State Department. Your take on what he said?
Well, I accept that under some form of elections, the current president has been in some way, you could say, endorsed by the Afghan people. But we have to remember that, frankly speaking, that Hamid Karzai was chosen by the United States in October of 2001, and the entire political process in Afghanistan has been led by the United States in particular and by NATO in general ever since then. And that includes things like the writing of the Constitution and various other things, the whole state institutions. It's very hard to say that Afghans would have chosen those state institutions modeled in that way, other than the United States invasion of 11 years ago.
Okay. Well, let me turn to Kabul and get Mr. Azizi back in on this discussion. With the situation, we've seen an increase on these green and blue assaults. Do you think any of it has to do with the various different situations as far as humiliation that has taken place in Afghanistan, whether it be the desecration of the Holy Quran or the desecration of Afghan individuals, their bodies, or night raids that many of the Afghan civilians have complained about? Your take, sir.
Thank you very much. In Farsi, we have got a very famous saying which states that Shunida kaibu wad manandi dida, which simply means that what you hear is never equivalent to what you see. I'm here on ground, I'm living in Afghanistan, and my friend Mirakai and my other friend, they both are sitting and they are thinking and dreaming about having an Afghanistan equivalent to Switzerland. No. We have to really respect the will of the people of Afghanistan. Do the people of Afghanistan want to turn Afghanistan into Switzerland? I think no, they are not. We want to be a normal country. We don't want to get developed overnight, because overnight development will take us nowhere. We have to go through the process, and the proper process, in fact. Now, coming towards the specific point, see, we have to understand the history of this country. We have to really face the realities, and we have to be factual rather than just making set of assumptions, and then after that we make our theories and try to implement them. It is a very vague. Dr. Mirakai is mentioning that the Constitution of Afghanistan was drafted in the State Department. I will completely reject it, because I personally have been involved in one way or the other way while the Constitution of Afghanistan was getting formulated here in Kabul. I have seen the debates which were coming from the Afghan scholars, from the Afghan experts, in order to nullify or verify the different articles of the Constitution. Now, our relationship with the U.S. is not a short-term relationship. We are trying to establish a long-term partnership with the Americans. We do understand our weaknesses as well as our strengths. And just for my friend from London, I have to remind him that Afghanistan has been, for the first time, on the right path in order to get economically independent. If we go through the history of Afghanistan, we have always been, after the Second World War, we have been economically dependent on the international partners and international donors. So it is not something new for us. However, today, for the first time, the Afghans are feeling proud because they have got their own sources of income. The mining sector of Afghanistan is getting developed, and Afghanistan will have their own domestic revenues in order to fulfill the expenses that Afghanistan would require in the long run. So this is all the realities, and I hope that my friends will be factual rather than just thinking of their own set of assumptions and whatsoever personal interest that they have got. They have to really give respect to the views of the Afghans here.
All right. Well, Dr. Mirakai, what about that? Mr. Azizi says he is standing or sitting on the ground in Afghanistan while you are in the United States. Now, he says that actually Afghanistan is on its way to economic independence, and basically for the first time ever that they're actually trying to establish a strong economic policy. Your take, sir?
The issue is this: there are two Afghanistans. One is Kabul, one is the rest of Afghanistan. This gentleman said, I'm sitting in America. He knows, he probably has seen me many times on television in Kabul. I've been there, I have spent months, and not in Kabul, by the way. I've gone to Helmand, I've gone to Kandahar, I've gone to Nuristan, when U.S. Special Forces cannot even go. I have gone to Kunar, I have gone to Khost, I have gone to Mazar-e-Sharif, I have gone to Baghlan, I have gone to Kunduz, to villages, not the centers of the cities. Remember this. The people of Afghanistan are those who are in the villages, who are getting night raids, who are getting killed, who are women are getting indignified, whose children are getting killed. This is not development, that is indignity. Secondly, the constitution of the Afghanistan was written and confirmed by two scholars, one in Chicago, in Washington, one in Paris. And it was taken to Kabul for debate. And the job was already done. Third, the issue is this, that he mentioned the Taliban are defeated. Let me tell you this. The NGO security organization last year stated that the security in 70% of Afghanistan is in the hands of Taliban. Now, let me put it this way. The significance of an organization, whether it's defeated or not, should be judged from its capability, whether it can carry out an operation at will in the center of Kabul or not. And the answer is yes, indeed. They can carry any operation in the center of Kabul, and they have done it so many times. And lastly, I must point out that, yes, Afghanistan had been a...
Okay, we have lost that connection in Chicago. Turning to Jim Brand in London. Now, Jim Brand, we've heard both of our guests talking back and forth, pros and cons to the American-led forces being there. Your take, where do you see this going? Do you think that the American forces will be helping this country to establish independence and a strong economy and then leave from Afghanistan? Or how do you see this playing itself out?
I find it rather strange to suggest that United States and NATO forces are there to assist or promote Afghan independence. United States has worldwide ambitions. NATO itself has worldwide ambitions. It's rather strange. NATO stands for the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. You look how far the Hindu Kush is from the North Atlantic, and it gives you some idea that something very strange is going on. The answer is that they do have geostrategic ambitions, and any sense of Afghan independence must and can only fall within that. It's not Afghans' independent development that they seek. It's Afghans' place within their declared worldwide ambitions. And actually, their declared worldwide ambitions are not that hidden. They don't shout them so loudly, but they don't completely cover them up. They are there for anybody to see who looks. So I think it's only that kind of, if you can call it independence at all, it's only that kind of dependency on NATO, dependency on the United States that these will tolerate. Because otherwise, frankly, they don't have any interest in Afghanistan. Afghanistan is a geostrategically important place, but otherwise for them, I'm afraid it's not very important.
Okay, and on that note, unfortunately, we are out of time, but I'd like to thank my guest from Chicago, Afghan author and expert, Dr. Mohammed Dawood Meraki, from Kabul, political analyst, Mr. Mohammed Azizi, and from London, from the Stop the War Coalition, Mr. Jim Brand. Thank you all for being with us. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us and joining us for another news analysis. Make sure you do the same thing tomorrow. Well, I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Thank you so much for being with us, and goodbye.